Hey, listeners, welcome back to the Dreadful Dialogue. I'm Elise, and listeners, I don't want you to be sad that Halloween is past, because here at the Dreadful Dialogue, we are spooky all year long. So with that in mind, today I have a director of the newly released film, Night of the Reaper. It's an exclusive for the streaming service Shudder. His name is Brandon Christensen. And not only did he direct this one, but he also co-wrote it with his brother Ryan. And he's known for other horror films, Superhost from 2021, and 2017 Stillborn. So Brandon, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm doing good. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad.
Good.
Oh, man. So this was a really fun one. I heard about it, of course, through Shudder. I'm rocking my Shudder Horror Fans. Yeah, my Shudder Horror Fans t-shirt. If listeners are not familiar, it's a Facebook group where, even though it says Shudder, they talk about other movies as well. But I had seen you in the group, and I had literally like just seen the trailer for it. And I was like, okay, I got to watch this movie. And it was really cool that you're willing to come on the podcast. And I loved it. Like 80s vibes, the ambiance.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, no, it was a fun one to make for sure. And yeah, the group's great. So if you are listening, it's a very welcoming group of horror fans. So go for it.
Yeah, they have like watch parties and discussions and a little bit of everything on there. So yeah, so let's get into the movie though. I want to know first how you guys came up with the concept for this movie.
Yeah, it was a really long kind of process because it goes back to when I was a kid. When I was in the eighth grade, I saw When a Stranger Calls at a birthday party. And that first 20 minutes of the film are just like that iconic cold open. And it just sort of stuck with me. It was such a great experience with a group. So when I grew up a little bit and I became a filmmaker myself, I always wanted to sort of try my hand at a babysitter film, but I never really had the right, idea for it. So back in like 2020, my brother and I just started talking about it, and we weren't really writing together yet, but I was about to go into production on Superhost. And I just mentioned to him like, hey, any ideas for a babysitter movie? And we started just sort of volleying back ideas, and we came up, we sort of like had the loose idea about a babysitter with a twist and just having our own stamp on it. And yeah, while I was shooting Superhost, my brother just wrote the cold open and sent it to me while I was on set. And I just read it. I was like, holy crap, like this is so scary and well realized. And it had so many of these elements that ended up being in the film. And it was just kind of like spitballing an idea out. But that's kind of like the way he works. Like, I'm an idea guy. I'll do point form. I'll speak, okay, this and then that and then this. But he's more of like a fully fledged, likes to put the words down in a more of a written way. And that's kind of cool because I'll help with the ideas and then he'll do the writing. And then I'll take that and I'll kind of make it my own. And it's very, very collaborative that way. But this was back in 2020, and we just kept developing it and trying to figure it out. And it was pretty complicated. But back in like 2022, we almost had a chance to do it, but it didn't happen. I ended up doing The Puppet Man instead. And yeah, it was just kind of like always just that movie that I wanted to do. And we finally got the opportunity with Shudder last year to shoot it. And I just put it together and finished it in July. And now it's out for the world.
Wow. That's a lot to hear about it from like concept to conception, like all the steps that went along with it. It's really cool.
Right.
Yeah. I love that you talked about the opening. That opening was totally epic. I love, like, again, this whole movie's full of ambiance, 1980s, the opening, and then the scene after. I mean, everything from, I mean, we got, like, MTV references, Star Wars, Walkmans. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I'm a child of the 1980s, so that was all relatable to me, right down to the wood paneling in the house.
Right.
My parents still have wood paneling that they painted over.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm 40 now. I was born in 85, so the early part of my life was in the 80s, and the 90s kind of carried into that a little bit. But I have old home videos, and just like from my parents and my grandparents and stuff like that. The 80s that I wanted to do in this film was the 80s in those home videos, like not kind of the hyper stylized hot pink, all these neon colors that you sometimes see in some 80s stuff. I wanted to do what both I remember as a kid from my childhood and also just like what I remember watching all the time when I'd always watch our old home videos. That was definitely a big part of it, was just like making it feel like the houses that I remember growing up in and just having that feeling. It's just like you said, wood paneling was everything back then. I don't know why, but it was great. And it looks great on film. It was a lot of fun just like trying to find those pieces and build that kind of false reality. It was really cool.
Yeah, where was that? It didn't even feel like a set. It felt like a genuine house watching it. I think
yeah.
it was just the little things you put in the background helped too.
For sure. It was actually two houses. So the upstairs and the outside were one house, and then the living room kitchen, that was another house. And so we found the living room kitchen house first, and it had an upstairs, but it was very modern now. Like they had done a ton of renovations, and for the budget that we had, like we just couldn't transform it the way we needed to. We had our locations people go out and try and find another location that could potentially work for both or work for part of it. 'Cause like when we saw the pictures from this the house that we shot in, it has all that arches and stuff like that in the kitchen and sort of in the transition. And it was just like, oh man, they're so cinematic and there's so much texture in the space that we didn't have to do a ton of work there. We just had to dress it with some older furniture and stuff like that. But the upstairs, the place that we found, it was just a white bedroom. And I was just telling the production designers, I was like, guys, we need wallpaper. Like, we have to have wallpaper. If we don't have wallpaper, this opening scene doesn't work. And so, like, we had to design it because they had to get it custom made for the film, and it was brutally expensive. And they're like, "Guys, this is not a good use of our assets." I was like, "It is, trust me. This is the most important thing we could possibly do on this film at this particular moment was do wallpaper." And that's just me being crazy, but it's kind of true. Like, if we didn't have that and it was just very modern looking bedroom, it just wouldn't play. And it had the things like it has the intercom on the wall, and I had that in my house when I was a kid too. Like, you could just talk through the house, and it has those little touches, and like the light switches and the door handles, everything had this like cool textures to it. And I just, you can feel it when you watch the movie, because if you've lived it, you know that what that smells like, what that feels like. That was just like the ultimate important thing was just make it feel right. And so a lot of work went into that with our team. I was definitely going crazy most of the time, but it just had to be right. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, no, I loved it. You mentioned the wallpaper that you're like, oh, it can't be the 1980s without wallpaper. And I'm like, I'm getting visions of my mom wallpapering different places. And now, yeah, we have no wallpaper whatsoever. And my parents still own the home that I grew up in. And like, there's no wallpaper whatsoever. But yeah, those little touches, it was like a love story to the 80s. I love that it was a babysitter movie and we talked about the twist. But before we get further into it, also with the opening scene, I love that she was dancing. And I'm not a movie maker, but I have read about how expensive music can be. Like, I know I saw a documentary about like Rob Zombie ate up tons of his budget for music when he did like House of a Thousand Corpses, but he was like, I needed this music. It was more important than anything. And this is an indie film and you have two epic songs in it. We got Pat Benatar's Heartbreaker and Blue Oyster Cult's Don't Fear the Reaper. How did you make that happen? That's cool for an indie film to have these great songs.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it was, I can tell you about it, but it was basically the opening. I wanted to have something that we could play there that would establish the time. Like, we had the MTV thing, we had figured that out already that we could get it, but we needed a song. And so we had a music supervisor out of Vancouver, and she sent us like a list of, I don't know, 20 songs or something like that. And it's kind of like, okay, this is the stuff you can afford in your budget. And there wasn't a lot of notable songs on it. Like, there was one that I liked the most at the time. It was a Flock of Seagulls' Space Age Love Song. And so it was just, it's kind of a vibier track. Like, it's not something you would dance to for sure, but it was cool and it was recognizable. So we're like, okay, maybe that. And then I went back to her notes. It's like, are there any other songs that we can get in this budget? She's like, oh yeah, I have another list. And she sent it to me. I had about 15 more, but on there was Pat Benatar Heartbreaker. And I was just like, whoa. I was like, that's cool. Like, that'd be fun. And then I turned it on and I'm listening to it. And I'm just like, oh, this can be so much more. Like, this can be a something that we really lean into. And we had just cast Summer at that point because we started with the cold open. And I reached out and I was just like, hey, we're gonna try and get this Pat Benatar song. I sent her a link and I sent her like videos to like 80s dancing. And I was like, can you just like learn some stuff and just in case we get it? And she's like, yeah, absolutely. And so she's like sending me videos in her hotel room, like dancing. And I was just like, oh yes, this is so fun. And like in the script, it basically just said, Emily turns on MTV, catchy shit, and she snoops for cigarettes. And so like when I heard that song, I was just like, no, like this should be this girl, she's young, she's in control for the first time in her life, maybe. Let's make the audience fall in love with her and have her like just lose herself to this song before things go really dark and scary. And I was just like, what a cool thing we can do. And like normally when you're doing a movie, music is added at the end. Like, you'll be like, oh, we can put music here, we can do that. But if we have her singing it and we have her like lip dancing to the song, it's going to make it that much more impactful. So we had her learn the lyrics, we had her learn some dances. And we just spent a day and or half a day just like filming a music video of her just like opening a can of pop or a Coke and just drinking it and eating chips and doing all this stuff and just sort of having fun with it. And yeah, she loved it. I loved it. It was of all the days on set, like that was the most fun for sure. Just it was like pure 80s vibes. And then when we were in post and I was editing the film, I was just like, I was at the end and I was like, oh, do you know what would be really good here? And so I just put in Don't Fear the Reaper. And I didn't expect to be able to get it because, like, we had already exhausted our music funds on that one song. And I had it in there and I just fell in love. And I was just like, well, it has to be this. I mean, it's like the movie, the lyrics, the song title, it all makes sense with what we just watched. Like, it's so powerful. And so I went to Natasha, our music supervisor, and I was like, hey, how much would this cost? And she's not to get into the numbers, but the cost was four times Pat Benatar. And so, immediately I'm just like problem solving. I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm supposed to get so and so for this work and that work, and like maybe we can save over here. And I'm talking to the producers, and it becomes like a math equation, and we're just trying to find that money. And eventually we did, and we hit the amount. And then I go to her, and I'm like, we got the money, let's do it. And then she comes back like a few days later. She's like, hey, I'm sorry, I was wrong. It's actually twice as much as that. And so I'm just like, oh, the dream is dead. I can't believe it. And I talked to the producers and I'm just like, I don't think it's going to happen. But then we ended up going to Shudder and we're like, listen, like if we can get the song, it's going to be so impactful. And then they gave us the rest of the money. So I don't think that's something they normally do, but I think they saw the power of it and how important it was for the film. And thankfully they bailed us out there because we did come up with most of the money, but we couldn't quite get us to the finish line there. So it was a big deal.
Wow, that's quite a story to hear about both of those. And yeah, I'm glad Shudder did that because the ending, you're like, whoa, and then like it's just the perfect way to like rock out to the end of the movie. You're like
Totally.
feeling it. You're like, wow, I didn't expect that ending. I don't want to go into too much. Like sometimes I like to give synopsises and stuff, but I'm not gonna go into too much because I really want to encourage people. I want listeners, if you don't have Shudder, get the streaming service. Shudder won't appreciate me saying this, even if you get the trial, go watch it. Check out the movie. So I don't want to spoil it, but it does go with the end. There's a fun twist in it. I wasn't sure where the movie was going. I was like, okay, I kind of naturally thought just from the beginning, I'm like, oh, this is going to be like supernatural. It's going to be a reaper. And then you're like, wait a minute, there's a babysitter. And you're like having fun with her rocking out. And then I love the like, even like you said, we fell in love with her. She goes from like she's being this responsible babysitter, and not that she was irresponsible per se, but then she, like you said, she cuts loose. Her time for the relaxing part of it, and it even felt 80s because she looked so much like younger nowadays. Like I think like getting a high school babysitter is like more terrifying, and back then it's like, yeah, like I remember babysitting
I
kids when I
know.
was like young myself, and
For sure.
yeah,
Same.
I loved it. Just it was good, but the I didn't know where it was going. But there is a nice twist in it. It kind of almost feels at times like it was almost three different movies. And I didn't personally figure out the twist. I wasn't looking for the twist either. I think I was just like, let's just watch it. Once I went back and saw it, I was like, oh, duh, that
Oh,
went over
cool.
your head. Like you didn't see that. But I can't wait for to hear from other people that have watched it, their thoughts on that twist.
Yeah, no, it was fun. And like, yeah, I mean, that was a big part of just the editing process because I edited the film and it's like you can't there in the script even there was a lot more in it to set up what was going to happen later, but like you're really playing with the idea like how much can we show before we're just giving away it too early. So like I do appreciate it when people watch it twice, and a surprising amount of people have watched it twice. Like they watch it once and then they go back to see what they missed, because when you watch it a second time it's kind of a different movie. Like you're like, oh, you're seeing these scenes in a new light, and it's interesting. And I've never done anything like that before. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to just sort of like thread this sort of side plot through the whole movie that you're not really seeing because we're distracting you with all these. There's so many references in the movie and just stylistic and even scenes themselves. Like they feel like they're from something else. And a lot of that's on purpose because we want the audience to get comfortable and think they know where it's going. You watch the cold open and you see this thing happen. And then when those same things start to happen to Dina in the movie, you're just like, okay, I know where this is going. But then you don't. And it does something else. And that was really fun.
Yeah, I thought you did a really good job of like treading delicately, like putting it out there, but not so much. And yeah, it's definitely watching it twice, you will appreciate that there are those minor details or like conversations that are had or things that are going on in the back where you're like, oh, I didn't realize that about that person, right, and how there would be these different connections. So I liked it. I didn't expect it. I figured once I started to suspect, like, maybe it's not supernatural. I started trying to look into it, but then I was like, I just want to like soak in the 80s right now. If I haven't made that clear, that was one of my favorite things with this.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I appreciate that because it's like Halloween comes around once a year and everybody likes their cozy movies, and to make something that is for that audience that just like, you know what, I just want to get into a blanket and I want to turn on something that makes me think of Halloween. That's like, that was like the goal going into this, like just make something vibey and cool and atmospheric and just capture a time and place that's kind of in the past, but still kind of rings true. And I think that's why a lot of people just, they always have those rewatches that they do every year because it just makes you get into the season. It's like watching Home Alone for Christmas or watching It's a Wonderful Life. Like you've seen it a million times, but it still gives you that feeling. And that's what we were really kind of going for.
Yeah, I think this film is definitely one that people could enjoy when they want to get into the Halloween vibe, because even some of your decorations that you had for like those 80s vintage, like the blow molds and the, I can't remember all of them, but yeah, the street you were on outside. I grew up from in SoCal, so we usually have like a hot Halloween. It's not very cold, but I would love to visit somewhere where it's like fall and it has that total vibes. Like I daydream about it sometimes, but yeah, that was something else that you guys really paid attention to and I appreciated.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's what we were hoping for. So glad it worked.
So you did have one cool effect. We just had I'll just leave it at an explosive head. That was really cool. I was like, is there going to be any major gore? I was like, oh, there we go. So I won't mention who it was or anything, but that was really cool. Can you talk about that at all? How you pulled that one off?
Yeah, sure. It was funny because like when we broke the story, that wasn't a part of it. Like we had the characters doing the things, but they, like my brother and I, it's very iterative when we're working together. Like we'll just throw ideas out and stuff like that. And so I found it recently. I was looking through old files of like, we work in like Google Docs. So it's like, we'll both be writing in the same thing so we can kind of get our ideas down. But I had, and it's very conversational and I'm just like, hey, do you know what would be really cool if we did this and like, and we could do this. And I was kind of like writing how it would work. And I just was like, oh, that's so funny. I remember doing that because I don't think my brother was 100% on board. I was just like, trust me, it's going to be dope. Like you just have to just trust me on this. And so we kind of had to work it back into the script and we found a way to make it kind of fit. But yeah, it was really fun. We had, a stunt actor that could do like a fall. And then we had like a neck built that was just this like silicone latex painted thing that the actors could wear around their head that just looked like it was the top of their exploded head. And it's very technical. Like we had to get very, and I did the visual effects. So I know I need this piece for this shot and this shot's going to happen next. And so it's a very technical piece of filmmaking for a very short period of time. It's like five shots or something, but it happens very quickly. I've done VFX for a lot of like almost like 20 movies now, including all of my own. And it was a good kind of like bringing all that together for like everything I've learned over my career and putting it into this scene, because there's just so many elements at play. Like there's the initial explosion shot, obviously. And we actually did blow up a head and two heads really. So on one of the nights that we were working, we had a side team kind of building this big green screen box with like protective stuff everywhere, glass that wouldn't break, et cetera, so that we could film this explosion happen. So they built like a full head with like a skull and everything, and they built a radio that had an explosive in it, and we went outside. It was like 3 a.m. It's freezing cold because we're shooting in mid-October in Calgary, Alberta, very cold. And we get everybody, we have two cameras rolling on it, everybody's watching on the monitors, they're all like so excited, phones are up, and then we're like, okay, let's do it, 3, 2, 1, bang, the radio explodes, but the head didn't. And so we're just like, oh no, the effect didn't work. And the guy that put it all together, he goes in and he's like trying to make the thing, the air compressor or whatever, go, and it's not working. And it's like, oh, it froze, it seized up. And so me and the stunt guy are just sort of standing there. Everybody's kind of lost interest because they have to do it. We have to reset it and try again. And me and this guy, Ron, we're just kind of standing there watching, and the guy gets a blowtorch out and he starts hitting it. Then all of a sudden, boom, the head explodes. Ooh. We're both like covered in blood. And then we go, we weren't rolling. So we didn't get that one on tape. So we had a backup head and they did that. And that's the one that's in the film. But it was just so funny because we're just like, it's like Wile E. Coyote with an explosion in front of him. And we're just like, It could have been very dangerous, but somehow we were okay because we were dangerously close to when that thing blew. We didn't expect it, but yeah, it was just like there was just a lot of elements that we had to shoot and then put together and piece it together. So it's practical elements, but composited together in a digitally, so it creates the effect. So it's kind of like a blend of the two, which I like the most because it's like VFX done with purpose kind of thing.
Well, that story gave me a little bit of anxiety.
That's movies.
I used to be in the military and I did some work. I was not EOD, but I worked with the EOD guys. Sometimes like they needed extra people to come out and they're just like, oh, we're just gonna explode some random stuff, or we're gonna explode like unexploded ordnance and stuff. And I was like, I'm backing up. I was always like the corner when I'm like, I'm not the trained one, I'm just the extra person here hanging out. So yeah, that gave me as much as anxiety as watching the movie.
That's good. Yeah, it's fun. Movies can be fun, and it was like we're on hour 14 of the night and we're just exploding heads and in the middle of nowhere. Sometimes you get weird. You're in weird positions and you're like, I don't know what's happening, but we're doing it, and it just is. It's pretty
Well,
funny.
I'm glad you guys are okay. So it sounds like you wore a lot of hats, that you wear a lot of hats for your film. I was looking at your IMDb and your resume. So you said you directed, you wrote, what else? You did some of the, what did you do in post-production? You said the
I
video.
edited it, I did all the VFX, and I did the color grade.
Wow. Whew.
Yeah, that was part of the getting Don't Fear the Reaper was like I have to take on some stuff that we can't pay out because my time's free. It is what it is. I would pay for it myself if I could, but it's just you can't. So I can at least lower what I make so that the movie can get more, and that's fine. When you're doing indies, like post-production is usually not accounted for as much as you're going to need. And I've been working in, not in film directly, but I've been doing kind of like I would go out and do music videos by myself, and I would just bring everything I have in my trunk and just like pull out everything, shoot everything by myself, go home and edit it. And so like that's how I started my career, was just being a kind of one man band kind of thing. And so I bring that mentality to the movies too, because I've just learned so much, and it's so hard to, if we had to bring a VFX supervisor to come do this head explosion, and like it slows you down. So if I just know, like, what am I going to need when I put this together later, I just sort of know what I need, and so I can build the sequence around that. And it just saves a ton of money, a ton of time, and I love doing it. I just like being involved from kind of beginning to end on the films. And as long as I'm doing indies, I hope I can keep doing that because that's what I love. I just like making movies. I don't care which part I'm in. I've done it all. I'll do it. And I just like to do it. I just like being a part of it. And that's why I have like 25 VFX credits and stuff like that. Like a lot of it's just jumping into projects, working for a little bit, jumping out, and just being part of something else, something bigger than yourself is really fun.
Yeah, I mean that's got to be, I would assume, a normal thing when it comes to making indie films, that people have to wear a lot of hats. You have to jump in and have to put in extra work if you want to get these films made. So that's really cool to hear that you have so much of that going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about, I want to ask you about a body cam. I was reading about that. Can you give us a little preview about that movie?
Sure. Yeah, it's another Shutter film. It's coming out next year. I can't say exactly when, but sooner than you'd think.
Okay.
We've been doing it's playing in festivals right now. It just played in like Ohio at Nightmares Film Festival, played in it's been playing kind of in various places, but it's my first found footage film. So it's a full body cam shot on body cams, and it's about two cops responding to a domestic dispute at a house. And when they go in, there's an accidental shooting, and everything kind of spirals out of control because they know that if this footage goes out and it gets leaked to the public, like their lives are over. So it becomes like an accidental shooting turned into a cover up. But while they're kind of trying to cover it up, they uncover some bad things, and the cameras aren't the only things watching them, essentially. So it's like a supernatural found footage, very dark nightmare of a movie. Totally different
Wow.
from Reaper.
Yeah, but that sounds really interesting. I couldn't find much online about it, other than I saw that it's been at some film festivals. So I'm glad. I'm looking forward to checking that one out.
Yeah, next year, for sure. Yeah.
Cool.
First half of next year.
Okay. What were one of your favorite? Tell me like a funny story or something interesting besides, I think I might have gotten one of the most interesting, I don't know, the explosive, but tell me another story from the set that you can share.
Well, this was brutal. Is we were nearing the end of production, it was like the second last week, and we're filming some stuff, and it all of a sudden starts to snow. And it's a fall movie, and we had to shoot the funeral scene that in the when we shot there was a lot more of it, but in the finished film it's only kind of at the ending there. But full whiteout blizzard, like everything's covered in snow. And the next morning at like 8 a.m., we're supposed to show up and shoot this scene that should take place right after the girl died in the opening. It's like, and it probably didn't matter, but I was just, again, I'm just like, when you're in the shit on a movie, you're just like, every detail matters. So I'm just like spiraling out of control. It's like 10 p.m. that night. We're supposed to go on set at 8. So I tell the producer, I'm like, push to 12. Like, we'll just push our day back because that might give the sun some time to melt it down. And I'll go there in the morning and I will work on trying to clean this up because it's a giant cemetery. So the next day I show up at like 7:50 or something like that, and one of the producers is there and he rented two Home Depot blower backpacks that you like blow leaves with. And I took it and I spent the next 4 hours before anybody showed up on set just blowing the entire cemetery by myself and just clearing it so it looked like green again. Because it was still green, like everything, it was just a random freak snowstorm, which we sometimes get. And so I blew the huge part of it because we had some like wide shots and all this stuff that didn't end up making it into the movie, so it doesn't really matter. But it was just funny because like crews start showing up at a certain time, and I think everybody knew that I was just like in a zone, so no one like really approached me. And my boots all worn through, and it's got a hole in it. I'm just soaking wet, and I still had a 12-hour day after doing this. But that's just like indie stuff, though. Like no one else, I can't ask someone, hey, go blow the cemetery. Like I gotta go do it. And so I spent about 3.5, 4 hours just straight, no music. I didn't even have AirPods or anything. I was just doing it, just with the crazy thoughts in my head. And so I spent all this time doing it. And then we shot, and the day was fine, and it is what it is. And you barely see it in the movie, so it's just in hindsight, I'm like, God damn it, I should have could have handled that better. But yeah, I mean, it's just funny. Like you're usually shooting for like 4 weeks, and that 4 weeks is just, it's like sprinting a marathon. There's just, it's nonstop. You don't sleep, you don't eat, you don't do anything. It's just the movie is all that matters, and it can drive you crazy, and you kind of turn into like Jack Torrance from The Shining, and you're just like, all work and no play makes Brandon go crazy. And that was definitely one of those moments where you're just like nearing the end of the shoot and you're just holding on for dear life and you're just like, I'll do whatever I have to get this movie done. And that was fun.
Wow, that's dedication to the continuity there.
You have to
And
do
like you
it
said, I mean, you had
sometimes.
no way to know, so
Yeah,
I
it just
appreciate
happened.
it.
Yeah, it's not in the forecast. It's like all of a sudden it's, hey, is it snowing? It's like, yep. And then just dumps and you're just like, uh-oh.
And then,
Not
like you
good.
said, I mean, you didn't even know what was going to end up in the cut. But if
Right.
you hadn't have done it, you wouldn't needed it. I'm sure
For
that's how it
sure.
goes,
Oh,
right? And if,
100%.
since you did it, that's just how it goes.
Every time, absolutely. Totally.
The movie making gods.
No, you're 100% right.
Yeah. Do you have any other future projects coming out that you could talk about?
I mean, body cams next year, and then we've got a couple of scripts out that we've written, my brother and I, and we're just trying to see if we can figure out financing and stuff like that. That's always kind of the battle. Certain movies I'll do, and the budgets are so low that I can kind of raise the money myself. But the couple that we've written, they're a little bit bigger that we're trying to push ourselves a little bit with. They require those outside people to find the money and do the things. So, like, unfortunately, I don't know what the next year is going to look like, but I'm desperately trying to get back on set. So hopefully, I'll have something soon.
Yeah, well, we'd love for you to come back and talk with us once Body Cam has come out, and
Yeah, for sure.
it sounds like it's really going to be a good one. But that's all I have for you. I wanted to just make sure to say, guys, check it out, Night of the Reaper. It's on Shudder. Check it out when you get a moment. Brandon, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. This is fun. Thank you.
Yeah, I hope so. Listeners, I hope that the dialogue wasn't too dreadful for you guys. I'm Elise. You can find me. Oh, where can we find you, Brandon? Wait, before we leave, is there anything you want to shout out on any social media or anything like that?
I mean, Instagram's kind of the main thing I use, just the Brandon Christensen. And then you'll see me on Shutter Horror Group, all the Shutter Horror fans on Facebook. I post on there a fair bit.
Nice,
So.
nice. Yeah, so it's a fun group. Everyone's welcome in there. It's cool. I've had nothing but a positive experience with that group. So yeah. All right. So check
Absolutely.
out the movie. I'm Elise. You can find me at Dreadful Dialogue Podcast and DreadfulDialogue.com. Thank you guys and everybody. Have a good one.